Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fig Podcast, a podcast where we're going to have conversations about pornography. Our conversations are going to focus on the experiences with pornography and its effects personally and ways we have succeeded or failed while trying to stop using. Today, I have the greatest privilege to have my closest friend with me. He's one of the smartest and well-spoken people that I know. You can find him on Instagram at DavidJRAtwell. Please welcome my friend David Atwell. How's it going, man?
Hey, good, man. Glad I can be a part of this and what you're doing here on the podcast. It's good stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. So I started with John the other day. That was cool. It was like I started stupid nervous, and then I ended up calling my dad and my mom. I don't know. It was so weird. I told them that.
Like afterwards?
No, before. I was like, I was supposed to call John in 5 minutes. Uh-huh. And then I was just like, okay, I should probably, I don't know, this is Jordan Peterson getting the best of me, but I felt like I should reach back to the generation that sowed into me. And so I was just like, hey, Dad, hey, Mom, I just wanted to say thank you. Like, I'm here. I don't know what this is, but I wouldn't be here literally if it weren't for you. So I just, it went to both of them went to voicemail, which kind of saved me the time, but ended up talking to them after. So that happened, and we had a conversation. It was really nice. It's a good time. So
I'm glad. I hope this one's better.
Yeah, me too. It needs to one up every time. Yeah, no one's going to keep watching.
Well, this is only the second one, so maybe our expectation can be low, and then, you know, you can have something to build off of.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll save my biggest insights for the next time you interview me.
Okay, there you go.
This is like episode 200.
Right, but David's then back. If I got to 200, geez, that'd be crazy. I'm trying to think of where even to start. Like, you and I have talked about this on and off. Like, we have been accountability partners on Covenant Eyes. We've been, we've had like several conversations. I know that, like, I guess what, before I got married, I know that I had conversations with you about, like, I don't even know if porn was something that I even wanted to get rid of. Like, do you remember that conversation?
Like, well, you were always really honest with yourself in the journey. I think most people, when they're deep into their struggle with pornography, they get to the place where they're like, dude, I don't even care. You know, like, at this point, trying to get rid of pornography in my life sounds like more work than just, you know, living through it. Right. But I think when you have a conversation with somebody who's in that, you know, that stage, I guess you could call it, if you want to call it a stage, they will be like, yeah, well, I think pornography would be a good thing for me to stop doing. But you've always been, you know, through your journey, I guess, really honest with yourself. So I remember those moments where you'd say, like, dude, I'm going to be honest. I enjoy watching pornography, so I don't feel like stopping right now. And like,
isn't that the same thing as saying, like, I don't feel like giving it up?
Like, well, no, it's a little more honest. I mean, because one person is saying like, oh yeah, this is something I should probably stop doing. And you're saying like, dude, I'm just going to be honest. Like, I don't want to stop, you know, like, like, you know, that's a little different.
Yeah.
But, everybody, I guess, who's trying to fight against pornography goes through different, I guess, stages. Freedom.
So I know that you're married. Has it been a year yet?
I got married June 30th. So it's coming up on a year in, a little over 2 months.
Okay. So 3 months. Besides your marriage, do you know, like what have been the strongest reasons that you found why you don't want to do it?
Well, I'm a type of person who I think, I have dreams for my life, and I tend to live in the clouds. That's kind of where my mind and my head and everything is at. And I've always just kind of had this sense that, like, if I'm to get there, I know I need to tackle the issues in my life, and one of them is pornography. So I, even honestly, more than marriage, I mean, marriage is a big, was a big push for me to, you know, fight against pornography. But I would even say like knowing the person I could be was a big motivator as well. Right. You know, like I always felt like the times when I was struggling with pornography, it coincided with the low moments in my life. And I'm not talking just like I watch porn like once every few weeks. I'm talking about watching it every day. You know, right. When it was like almost a part of my daily routine, that's when I had the lowest moments in my life. And
do you think those things are interconnected?
Yes. Yeah, I almost think if when pornography becomes that frequent, it's less of the main problem, more of a symptom to a deeper problem, whether that be just devastation or just, you know, living with a nihilistic attitude or something like deeper within you, not having a lot of hope. I think a lot of times pornography can be a symptom of something deeper in your heart.
Do you think that it's always a symptom of something else, or do you think that it's both? Like, I mean, I guess the opposite would be like, so my view on it, I can't remember who I was talking to this about with, but, people have asked me like, well, why do you look at porn? Like there's gotta be a reason for it. And I have tried to come up with something in my past of like, okay, there's gotta be something. And I can't think of anything. Like I know that when I'm at my worst and I'm stressed, I have used porn, and I mean, but the idea that it started because I had something there, I don't agree with. I think that it's just like, well, you can choose as many women as you want in whatever position and thing they want. And why, like, that seems like a natural urge that would just be built within you, not coming from a stress aspect. Just like if you could not get caught doing whatever you wanted, that it, how many people would say no to that? And so, I don't know, how much of it do you think is that versus actual underlying problems?
I really think that it's different for everyone. You know, I think everyone experiences life differently. So I think it's wrong to say every time that someone struggles with pornography, it's because they have this hole inside of them. Okay. Like, I think there's healthy people who watch pornography, and I don't want to say healthy as in there's nothing wrong with them, because everyone's got their things they got to work on, but I definitely don't think it's always a case of an underlying issue. At the end of the day, pornography feels good, right? And so that's reason enough to do it, I think, for a lot of people. So I don't think it needs to be this deep, deep issue. Okay. I think for me, though, if I'm speaking in my own personal experience, pornography was a way for me to feel something when I was in moments where I couldn't feel something. And so whether it was I was very just disappointed with where my life was going, I was very insecure, I feel like that was a way for me to get some momentary good feeling out of life, to counteract what my life was at. I'm just thinking about like my first couple years at college, going through some of the tough things that I went through with roommates. And my first couple of years of college were really tough because I was really contemplating, you know, why am I here on this earth? and, you know, trying to find my identity. And I was in a family where college was really pushed. And so I found myself 2 years into a degree that I realized I didn't want. So I was just asking myself a lot of big questions. And so pornography came along and offered me a momentary peace, or at least it looks like it, at least, you know, a momentary good feeling. And that's why I used it at that moment. But my struggle with pornography goes back way farther than just college. But definitely college was the time where it was the deepest. I was almost doing it every day at some points. Sometimes multiple times a day. It was pretty bad. So
Yeah. So you said you felt like it hindered you from like reaching who you wanted to be. Do you think that there's a way that you can put that to words of like, why does looking at porn mean you can't be who you want to be?
I think some of it comes down to I saw pornography, and I believe pornography is bad for the soul in the sense that I think it is a version of adultery when you're in a relationship, but even when you're not in a relationship, I do believe that pornography is giving something away. Like the sexual experience, I think you can't take out the intimacy factor to sex. And it doesn't seem like sex when you're not thinking about it, but if you really do think about it, pornography is a sexual act. And because of that, I think, and part of the reason why it feels good is because there is some level of intimacy that you get out of it. Not that you're really being intimate with the person that you're watching necessarily, but it's still there. And I feel like for me, it was a symptom to a greater need in my life that could have been directed in a different way. So I was trying to get good feelings out of life, momentary happiness or satisfaction. But one, I'm not putting a lot of work into it. And I believe you get more out of harder work. So like if I were to spend time with a relationship and really work on it, like I did with my current wife, we went through tough times and current wife, my
yeah,
wife.
Yeah, that's what I was laughing
she's
at.
She's actually sitting next to me, so. my wife. You can just hit me if I say something stupid. it took time and it took work, but out of it has come blessings and, feelings, but also just joy that pornography was never able to give me. And I think it's because you don't put work into pornography. It's really easy. It's really quick. It's behind closed doors. In my situation, it was. And there was a lot of shame involved. And I just think at the end of the day, it wasn't the path to joy. It was the path to quick happiness. And I think that becomes not enough for the human soul, for the human spirit. And so I don't know. I like I said before though, I can't speak to everyone's situation. I can only speak to my situation. So that's kind of my experience with it.
Yeah. With one of the girls that is living with us, she is, she was making an issue with the fact that she had to do dishes. So we've got a chore chart where every week on Sunday we've got, I told you about this, right? So every week, we pick a daily or like routine thing, like doing the dishes and, like sweeping the kitchen floors. And then, so for that week, each of us is responsible for that thing. So if you pick dishes, you're responsible for the dishes. And then, there's two weekly chores, which is like cleaning the bathroom, like, cleaning the toilets or, mopping the floors. Mm-hmm. And so she had dishes for the first time in like 2 months of her doing chores. She got dishes for the first time. Everyone else had been doing it every other week. And I understand, you know, it's not fun doing dishes, but she made a comment about the fact that it was dumb that she had to help because she cleans her dishes every time. So why is she having to clean everyone else's dishes? Why don't they just clean their own? And Nia Chan made a comment about the fact that like, well, I don't only cook for me, I also cook for her. And so like when the benefit of porn is the fact that like you get whatever you want at any time. You're like, it's the ultimate wife. It does what you say anytime you want it to, you know, it makes you the sandwich and that's it. But the thing that you lose is the benefits, like the benefit on the chore aspect of it was like, people make dinner for you. People are sitting around and talking with you. You're valuable to them. You lose that side of the coin on individualization. And so, when all you're doing is focusing on your your own personal sexual needs and don't have anything to pour into, you lose right. that benefit of the fact that someone else is there to love you right. with your wife. And so it's a weird thing, because I've experienced that when I've, on my worst days and I really want to go to porn, I get yeah. super frustrated and irritated at Nia Chan, because I'm just like, oh, she's the thing that's keeping me from having what I want at the time. And that's the only way of frame of reference that I can seem to gather of her at the moment. And, I've had days where I've tried as hard as I could to remember, like, okay, well, remember how miserable you were when you were single and just wanted someone to actually give a crap about you, and all you did was look at porn, and it was like, it was a curse. And so, like, and it's not easy to remember that. Like, it's, I guess you could, it's like the Israelites being like, we should go back to Egypt because at least we had cabbage. It's like you forget, you can yes. only remember the good things, and you completely right. space the bad. And it's so hard to do that, especially with for something sure. like porn, because it's like, it always seems like it'll hit the right pleasure at the time and it'll fix every problem that you have, even though you know that yeah. it's not.
It's true. It's, you know, it's the fact that like sacrifice, ends up, being the way forward.
Yeah.
Even when it's a hard sacrifice.
Yeah.
And there's always that temptation towards hedonism, you know, towards just what feels good in the moment. Right. There's always that temptation, but, I think that's just kind of a life principle, is you have to give up to go up, right? You have mm-hmm. to, the greater the sacrifice, the greater the joy at the end, right? And I think that's why I've found that, I mean, it's just obvious when you look at my life, like when I was deepest in pornography, I was also at the lowest point of my life. But mm-hmm. now I feel like I have more confidence. Greater sense of self. I feel more wise. That's a weird thing to say. I don't think I'm there yet, but the fact that I'm married too, like when you're watching porn, it's not like that girl then becomes a part of your life and makes you a better man.
No,
you turn off the yeah. turn off the computer and that's it. Whereas, you know, being in a relationship with a real woman, and somebody who can challenge you, and somebody who mm-hmm. shows you a different perspective, because my wife has a different perspective on life, I just think it's a better path. You know, and it takes work, it takes sacrifice, but
right.
I just think that's all part about the principle of sacrifice leading to greater joy and a greater work at the end. So,
right.
I think that's why it's not good. It's tough to, I mean, there's also the Christian element. You know, and you don't have to be a Christian to think that pornography is wrong. But I think there's a very real Christian principle to it as well.
See if you can give the best argument on the Christian standpoint, because I don't like, you know, sometimes I'm like, OK, well, I think there's very practical reasons as to why you shouldn't. But how about completely in pro? Like what?
I've always thought the opposite. I've always thought it's easier to think pornography is not a big deal when you don't come from a Christian worldview. But when you come from a Christian worldview, you see the verse where Jesus says, even if you have lust in your heart towards a woman, you've committed adultery. Right. And basically what it says is heaven's standards are a lot higher than ours. And yeah. So when you look at heaven's standards, it's pretty obvious when you think about the fact that not only are you lusting after a woman when you're watching pornography, but most of the times you're also participating in it on your own. And I think you just look at that one simple, and there's probably more in the Bible I can't think of right now, but I think that alone is pretty obvious that it's not the path to holiness that we're called to be when we are a Christian, when we're deciding we're going to live like Jesus. I think it's pretty obvious that pornography is not part of the equation.
Why do you think it is? Like, so on the Christian standpoint, whether it's being beaten down with theology or it's because of the Holy Spirit, when you're raised in a Christian home, you're definitely, there's that shame element of the fact that's like, ooh, porn is bad. Like, it's definitely for sure. taboo.
Yeah.
But yeah. okay. I don't think, Okay. Do you think that most people experience shame even regardless of their spiritual upbringing? Do you think it's universal to experience a negative feeling with porn even without an underlying theology?
Definitely. I think that's why people, even if not in a Christian upbringing, hide the fact that they watch porn, or at least they're not doing it in front of their friends.
Yeah. Look at my history.
Yeah. Don't, you know, clear browser history is a universal thing. I think it has something to do with the fact that, what I was saying before with, I think you can't take away the intimacy element of sex. And, I think it has something to do with that. I think our culture likes to think of sex as just purely just an action, but yeah. I think it's a lot deeper than that. Yeah. And I don't know if a lot of our society is ready to admit that.
Yeah.
I think we still think that, sleeping around, there's just no consequences to that. I think we still think that, sex is an important part of getting to know if somebody is, you know, quality to be marriage or not. I think, I just think our society is
viewpoint. I was actually talking with, with John about that on that conversation. Cause like by being exposed to a giant amount of women, whether virtual or physical, you increase the amount of pickiness you get to have. You're like, well, I like this and I don't like that. And I like this. Yeah. I like it when they do this. And so inherently it's going to increase how disappointed you are with any individual. And so even though you might be completely naive and not know, like if you had never had sex and you had sex for the first time when you're married, well, you wouldn't know that it sucked because that's all you've known. You so like, I feel like ignorance in that sense would be, do you know what the term ignorance is? Bliss. I get the general terms, but what does bliss mean? Do you know,
let's look it up.
Okay. So I
was going to try to give a definition of it, but, it would be better. Perfect happiness, great joy, a state of spiritual blessedness.
Okay.
Oblivious of everything else. So I think there is kind of a connotation to bliss of the fact that you're ignorant.
Yeah. Or naive.
I think they're kind of connected. Probably... Or naive. Yeah. And not always bliss is a good thing, which is why ignorance is bliss is sometimes said sarcastically. Like you could live in your mansion and have servants and everything's brought to you and you think the world is great because ignorance is bliss, but that's blindness. Right. So I think that sometimes that phrase is used to be a critique of people living in that. But I also think there is, that's why we don't want to expose 3-year-olds to rated R movies, because ignorance is bliss. They're living through this beautiful innocence of childhood that we want to protect.
Right.
And I think, because once innocence is lost, then it's lost, and I think that's part of the perspective of when you say ignorance is bliss with somebody coming into marriage as a virgin, which I was a virgin before I got married.
Same virgin brothers.
But I had struggled with porn, and because porn was such an extensive history to me, I did have things I had to let go of, right? It's like, expectations that are way too high, and what you see, like, spoiler alert, what you see on the internet as sex is not what real sex is like.
That's not true. 45-minute long sessions are obviously possible. No,
it's not.
Zach Ford, we were talking a while back, and I don't know why it didn't cross my mind. It's never crossed my mind. Everyone says it's fake and everything, but it's like, I've always had in the back of my mind, like, well, I'm watching it. What is it, animated? They're obviously real people, so it can't be fake. But the thing that he said was, they do that in multiple sessions, right? Like they pause and then, then they resume. And it was like, why did I not even think of that as a possibility? Like these 45-minute long videos, as if this guy was just making it happen. Like
I've never thought about that.
Right? So it's just like, oh, well, that makes sense. I mean, because they're like these supermen. They go on forever. And so, it is a shame that
Think about that as a role. Think about that as a role reversal. Sorry. Like, and not to say that women don't watch porn. I think women do watch porn more than I think a lot of people realize. But guys come, a lot of guys who struggle with porn come in and they have to understand that pornography is not like what they see on the internet. But like, what if it was the woman, right? What if her expectations on us guys in marriage was what they see on the internet? And then yeah, you're just, I mean, like, you hear, oh,
that because guys can, you know, we're the crack of the joke when it's just like, oh yeah, that was the best 8 seconds of my life. You know, right. Like,
right. It's like, but then when you realize you're competing with 6-pack abs who last an hour, you're just like, oh no, lower your expectation, please. You know? And, you have to remember how, and we can get into this subject maybe, but you have to remember how sex doesn't just affect you. It affects people around you, including your girlfriend / wife, not labeling it.
I've got a coworker of mine. He wasn't a Christian, which kind of made it fun because it's actually more interesting to me to get perspectives on people from people who, at least aren't ready with an answer. Like, and a lot of the times when I'm talking with Christians, they're like, oh, this reminds me of Galatians 14:6. And then they quote that and it's just like, oh, okay, well, what about your ideas? And so that it was really cool because he told me that he would get checked for STDs every 2 months. Because I was just like, you know how much sleeping around you've got to go. I mean, and maybe I'm just like, whatever, but like, I don't know how common that is. But for me, that seems like a lot of that very often that you'd be sleeping around that much that you're like, shoot, I need to get tested every 2 months, make sure everything's okay. And one of the things that in his conversations that we had was his last girlfriend cheated on him and it was really hard on him. And he essentially was having a bunch of flings and wasn't prepared to, he took a very long time to find a relationship that he was willing to stick with for a long period of time. Yeah. And, I could completely see, like, this isn't porn, but it's the same thing. He'd slept with so many women that he he didn't want to commit to anyone, and he had a mistrust for cheating. It's not only because of the fact that he had slept with multiple people, but I just couldn't help but see the fact that the shallowness of the relationships immediately interpreted his view of relationships. And so, he'd sleep with 50 women, and he treats them transactionally, and so I mean, so that means that they are too, and and so then it infers on you that you're also a piece of trash as much as they are, even though, you know, it's not that I'm not treating them like they're a piece of trash or a piece of meat, but it's like, well, I don't know. I think that there's the thing I disagree with, like, my best argument towards why is it not transactional, when bad things happen, like with rape, we all, like, overall, the majority of the population see that as a travesty. It's terrible. Like, oh my gosh, it's not just like something happened to me. Something deep within myself was destroyed by someone taking force over me. And it is a shame, and that person deserves to be punished or put to death. Like, overall, we pretty much agree with that. And so on the negative aspect, we view sexuality very highly. We're just like, it has to be protected. We deserve this thing. But when it comes to the use of it with pleasure, it seems that we don't want to take the weight of it with any responsibility. We don't see those two things as connected. And I think to me, that's kind of the proof that it's deeper than something that's just transactional. There's something inside of us that calls, I don't know, it at least connects with our deepest pains. So why wouldn't it connect with something on the positive end? So I don't know.
That's true. Yep. I will say, like, I think some of the most, this is weird to say with my wife right next to me, but some of the most beautiful moments in this last year of us being married was when sex was just legit. Like, it was just awesome. And then we're just like laying down next to each other and just laughing about it.
Right.
You know, just Nope. She's going like this. it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Right. And I think it's because we worked for it. You know, right. We worked to get to this point, you know, and it was, I had to get on one knee, scared as hell, and say, will you marry me? That was hard. And I had to buy that ring, and that was a lot of money, you know, and this is all the beautiful thing that leads up to a relationship that we're going to be building until the day we die, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, God willing, it's going to get better and better as we keep getting older. And you know, so I think, I got off track. Sorry. But
no, you're fine.
I agree. It's not, it is transactional. Yeah.
I think it's also cool that people like when you tell them that you're a virgin, when you got married, the amount of people that overall, first of all, they say that you're lying and then they make fun of you. But then if you wait long enough, there's a moment where they respect you.
Small thing.
No, you're fine.
One of the most embarrassing moments of my life was when my mom announced to everyone at my wedding that I was a virgin going into getting married. I don't know why.
I remember that.
You remember that? My mom was
funny.
She was given this speech and just, you know, the speech at my wedding. And she was just like, and I'm just so grateful that you guys decided to stay pure going into your wedding and to honor God by not having sex. And it's like, you don't have to say that the way there's just, it's not like anybody's like,
it is something to be proud of. I don't know. Like I really do. Like as much as I get the embarrassment, like it's something that I guess like on, I don't know, this is going to feel like a really big side tangent, but, I talked to you about this the other day when like there's so many things that our society has done a really good job at praising women. But there's very few things when it comes to praising men. And so we're very much so used to it. If you're talking about men, it's usually a negative thing. If we're in a commercial, we're the bunt of the joke. You know, when someone like Jordan Peterson comes along and says like, hey, you know, that part of you that everyone says is useless, maybe you can just put it to good work. It's like, it's such like, man, that's so nice to hear, you know, like maybe, you know, and so I think that even though it is embarrassing to kind of get praised for that, it's something that it should be treasured. Like the fact that it's gotten to a point in our society that it's embarrassing that our mom praises us for one of the hardest things that we can possibly do, stinks, you know. Maybe it would always be embarrassing. I could be wrong, but,
I don't think it'll always be. I mean, like you look at previous societies, it was kind of a given, like, of course you're a virgin going into marriage, you know? So it's not that way anymore, obviously. I think the reason why I'm embarrassed, I think people kind of scoff at the idea that you're a virgin.
Weird, right?
Like I think it's more like the question they ask next is why, right? It's and it just tells you that it's almost like the idea that sex is not transactionable is like embedded in our culture, you know?
Right.
So much
you haven't become a man until you've had sex. Like, so weird, man. Like it is the try it before you buy it mentality is one, it's dumb, but it's a shame because like you don't get the benefits. Like you don't get those benefits of like, I don't have to think about, is my wife's sexual experience with me as good as it was with someone else? And if you've ever had that thought, you know, like if anyone has ever had that thought, I would venture to say that it's probably they would wish that they didn't have to think about that. You know, like if you could not have this thought or have this thought, I would venture to say most people would probably choose, well, I don't want to have to think about that. Well, okay. Well, there's a way that you don't have to think about that. You make the sacrifice and you don't do it until you get married. And, it, 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 it's a shame. It really, it not even just a shame. It, yeah. It's just, it stinks that we're so disconnected from the idea that people are baffled when you don't, when you haven't had sex. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I, the same person that, my coworker, he was just like, man, like I couldn't do it, you know, but that's cool. Like, and it's yeah. like, it's, it melts your heart. Cause you're just like, well, you could, like, obviously you can't revirginate, but like there's, but there's, it's just a shame to see that someone has accepted as a part of who they are that I couldn't ever be that ideal, but good for you. Like, and that's just the way it is. And they'll live with their themselves, hopefully not for the rest of their life that way, but that's the way they've been prepared to do that. And I don't know. It's sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I was watching a video, a YouTube video. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jubilee. They make these videos where they put like eight people in a room and one of them is like the odd one out and you have to like guess and there's like money involved. There was one that they did where there was seven people. There was one virgin and seven non-virgins and they had to figure out who was the virgin. And it's super funny. And what you do is like every round you have to kick out somebody and you're trying to kick out the virgin, right? In this scenario. And there was a kid who came in and he was wearing a unicorn shirt and he got kicked out first. And that goes to show you society's views of people who are virgins. It's yeah. not that guy wanted to be, it's that guy couldn't, right? It's like he's a virgin because he wasn't trying to be. No one
would sleep with someone with a unicorn shirt.
So I think too, it's like virgin means like you can't get it, right? But yeah. the guy who, anyway, there ended up being only three people left. And then you can choose if you think you've kicked out the virgin by the end, you can choose, well, we're done. They could choose to be done. And then if they kicked them out, then they get the money or whatever. So one of the people who lasted to the end was the guy who was the virgin. And at the end, they asked, like, why are you a virgin? And he's like, well, it was a commitment I made with God, like just part of my faith. I believe in staying pure until marriage, and people respected it. I think at the end of the day, I think if you have a conviction and you stand to your conviction, I think people are going to honor that. Whether I mean they might not agree with you, you know, they might not share the same faith as you, but I think there is a level of respect that people have for somebody who has a value and sticks to that value no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, if anybody's listening here and they're struggling with being a virgin and it's because of a conviction, like, dude, keep going for it, bro. I think it's worth it in the end. It's hard though. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I went through that journey and I walked Gino through that journey as well. We were friends through all the different times that you could have, but you didn't. And I think,
right.
I think you and I both would agree that, like, in the end, now that we're married, it was worth it. Definitely, it was right. worth it. Because now, Lisa doesn't have to worry right. about any previous relationships right. I've had, like you said before. So
yeah, yeah, and there, even if we would have been like, so let's just say her and I would have slept together, and then we got married, and we were both our firsts. Mm-hmm. See, there's an argument where it's more understandable as like, well, it's not going to bother you as much. For me, it would bother me because we had made it so close, you know, like we were so close to getting married and then we did it before. Like if that would happen, it would bug the crap out of me because it was just like, dang, you've given up your whole life for something and then you slipped it by 6 months. Like, and you can't take that back. You can't alter that. There's always going to be that part of you that said, you know, you gave up right before. So that would bug me. But for someone who doesn't have that goal and is perfectly fine with it, that's one of the difficult arguments that I have where it's just like, oh, we were both our first and then we got married and it was great. And it's like, okay, well, you know,
yeah.
I wonder what I know that people who move in together before they get married have a higher likelihood of the relationship not working out. I wonder if there's statistics on people that that sleep together before marriage. I'm sure that those two things are probably pretty connected. But so okay, when it comes to porn. How have, what has been the most effective methods or things that you have done to, that has helped you stay free for the longest?
Most effective was to not, was not keeping it secret. I think that was the most effective. I remember there was a time where this was, I think, a couple years into college. And I think I had said before that was kind of where it was a low point. I was watching porn almost every day. And it was, and I was doing it because I was not happy. That's why I was doing it. It was to try to make myself happy. So it was not a good, not a good time of my life. And I remember, I don't remember who recommended to me. It might have been you. It might have been a pastor at my church. But it was recommended to me that I tell my dad that I was struggling with pornography. And that idea, I remember when somebody suggested that, I was just like, no. Like, nope, not going to do that. Because I can think of a million people who I'd rather share with than my dad. I would probably have rather made a video and put it on the internet that I'm struggling with pornography than to sit down one-on-one with my dad and talk to him about it, right? And so it,
and that's not because your dad is condescending. Like, no. At least not in my view. I wouldn't see it that would be
reason. I have a great relationship with my dad. I love my dad. He was a great dad. And he shares the same faith as me, you know? So I don't even think he wouldn't understand. It was just getting that, having that conversation with my dad is just not something that I really wanted to do at all.
And do you think that you, that would come from like a fear of him having a different view of you? Like you aren't as strong as he would have had thought, or that's interesting that it's like your dad is the one that you wouldn't want to tell. Like that, the fact that you say like, oh, I'd rather post a video. Like that's usually like the pinnacle of people's embarrassment.
I think because he would take it, I think I knew he would take it seriously. And I wasn't ready to take it seriously. I would be embarrassed too. Like, I think because, and I don't necessarily think it's an expectation. I think it's just the relationship I had with my dad. I don't know. Your relationship with your dad is always complicated, and it's a whole life that you had with him. And for me, my dad, I felt like if I'd ever presented a problem to him in my life, like he would take it seriously and he'd help me to fix it. But I also think at that moment, I wasn't ready to fully confront it. And so that would be the reason why. Maybe there were other reasons too, but that's what comes to my mind. So anyways,
do you think that you, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So I sat down with him.
Oh, you didn't talk to him. Interesting.
I did. Yes. I sat down with him at a coffee shop and I told him that I struggle with pornography. And, and he totally did not react the way I thought he would. He's like, all right, great. Not great, but like, thanks for telling me. And, we began to talk about how I can clean up my life. And because I knew at that point that it was more of a symptom of a greater level of disappointment with the way I was living my life. Like I wasn't, my room was a mess. I was not doing my homework. I was getting bad grades. I think that was the semester or around the time where I was under academic suspension one semester because I didn't do well in my grades. And really? My scholarship, who was giving me full tuition, told me I needed to improve my grades or they'd kick me out of the scholarship program.
Dang.
And so it was just not a good moment in my life. And I knew I needed to fix it. And I knew pornography was one of the things. So I sat down and actually we decided to meet weekly for, I think we met for a few months. I don't remember how long it went, but it was just so helpful for me to finally kind of clear the air and not have to hide anymore, and take responsibility of my life. And it was not fun. We met at 7 a.m. before my classes, and so I had to wake up early every week.
Yeah.
Because that was the time my dad could meet, and I had to get really real with my dad, but I think it ended up being very helpful for me. And so when you ask, like, what was the thing that number one thing that helped me was just to be honest with myself by telling somebody about the struggle with pornography. There's other things that I think are really helpful too, but
did you know that you needed to do that before you talked to, like, you know, you said someone recommended that. Had that thought crossed your mind before someone recommended it?
Not telling my dad. No, that hadn't thought. Okay. Telling somebody did. Yeah, it was hard because I was also leading other people. I was a leader of a small group at my church, and people knew me as the, you know, the guy who was a Christian and held to his faith and things like that. And so it's not always easy when you're in that position to admit that you have a problem, because you're holding yourself in this high esteem, which I was at the time. So, yeah.
It's weird that it's a bummer that, you know, that's part of the reason that I kind of wanted to have these conversations was we seem to think that people that admit their faults are like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. Did you see how vulnerable he was? That's amazing. Yeah. And it's like that's such a rare thing. It's like, obviously it's going to be a rare thing because it's not easy to even be truthful to yourself, let alone to other people. Mm-hmm. It's a bummer that happens in people, in people's lives, especially in leadership, and in Christianity, because, like, of all the people that need, of all the people that need the help the most are probably people who are leading people, because, you know, not only do you have the weight of your own life, you have the weight of others' lives. And so the likelihood that you can bear that alone is, just statistically speaking, very unlikely. And so the likelihood that you can get through that, and not fail is already, you know, the odds are against you. And so it's a bummer that we, and I don't know if this is like a societal thing. You know, I don't think that anyone's just like, oh, pastors just can't mess up. I don't think that that's the message that we tell pastors. It's like just normal. It's like subconsciously, we all know that when we are failing to meet the mark, we feel shame, regardless of where we're at. And it tends to turn into isolation or like hyper judgmental attitude. And so it stinks that that's how we're wired to kind of just isolate,
right?
Because it's counterintuitive. Like, the thing that you need, I mean, is in the place that you least want to look. So
definitely,
which is I know that you know where I'm quoting that from. it's such a true
if you didn't know, this guy is a Jordan Peterson fan. I don't know if you
Tell it's, I think it's it's probably come through three times in this conversation, but yeah, I mean, it makes sense though. It's just like, gosh, how do I clean up my mess? It's like, well, maybe you could talk to your dad, and you're like, nah, I'll clean up a different mess. Is there another one that I should do?
Yeah.
So
it's true. I think that's one of the things why pornography is so rampant with so many people is because it can be kept in the dark. It's pretty easy. I started watching pornography in middle school. And I did it all throughout high school and college, and nobody knew. My parents never found out. I was really good at hiding it. I'd never been caught. Never.
Dang, and lucky you. I was, for some reason, even though I've been great with technology, I've gotten caught so many times.
Never, dude. I mean, installing Covenant Eyes and somebody finding the report, that's happened to me.
Yeah, that's different.
But I mean, nobody's walked in that. Oh man, that would have been
I've almost had someone walk in. It was like the moment I finished, like within 2 seconds. So I wasn't like, I was under my blanket, luckily, and my sister walked in the room and it was just like, have you seen Ace Ventura? When he was in the little tent, and someone walks in on him and he's like, oh, excuse me. I was just, practicing my mantra. It felt like that moment for me because I was
have
like,
not seen
oh
that.
My goodness. Like just 10 seconds later, I don't know why my door isn't locked. What do you want? Like, you know, and you can't freak out and say, what do you want? Cause then they know, geez, man, it was the worst.
You have to act normal. Yes. That's funny. Yeah. I never got caught. So I was able to keep in the dark.
I want to ask you this. So neither of us have kids, but, I have been thinking about this a lot now that we've got the two girls with us. They're on their phones like 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the average screen time report I think is like 8 hours a day. And that's including on school days. And that's like including school days where they're actually at the school before COVID. Like 8 hours a day, getting off at 3 p.m. means you're on that phone forever until 11 p.m. And so like, it has hit me really hard thinking like, okay, when I have kids, I want them to be technologically savvy. Like we're in a technological revolution of a world. I cannot pretend that it doesn't exist and protect them from it.
Right.
Like they need to be prepared to live in a technological world.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've been really wrestling with, first of all, what age I would give them a phone. But then second, if I just give them a flip phone, because I just don't know if we are just equipped in general as like, even as adults, how difficult it is to, stop playing video games, not binge an entire series.
Yep.
You know, it's just ridiculous. And then not check your Instagram 10,000 times a day. So let alone kids who haven't had the lifetime of experience of limiting yourself for the sake of something better, because most likely that idea just hasn't even struck their heads yet.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think of the idea of not getting your kids a smartphone, until either they buy it themselves or until they're like 16, 17? Like, do you think that that's a good idea, a bad idea?
I think that will stunt them socially, because I think, I mean, it's just the reality that I think on a smartphone is the capability to be able to socialize and to allow yourself to be welcomed into a social group, which is really important for growing up, especially middle school. So I think if I were to have a kid that were to grow up with only a flip phone, which is what I did. I mean, I didn't have a smartphone until my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I think because of the way our society has progressed to a place where now it's almost a pivotal part of learning. Even I got a laptop when I was in middle school as part of my school.
Right.
I just don't think there's a way to prevent exposure. And I also think, I think it more hurts than helps to take away all technology until a certain age. I think it's better to integrate it.
Yeah, like it wouldn't be taking it away though. Like since you get to control their environment from when they grow up. So like you wouldn't be taking it away. You would be like, when do I get to add this in? Because like, you know, I understand the whole socialization but like, is it really socialization? They broke the rules of like, okay, while you're at school, even though you're at home, you're not going to be on your phone. And so they did it. We were both out doing Instacart and then I walked in on the house and they were on their phone. And it's just like, okay, fine. You don't get the phone for the day because you're not respecting those boundaries. So we're going to take the phone for the day. But when they, for that day, you know, they had already broken the rules and been on their phones. At like 6 p.m., they're like, hey, can I please get on Snapchat because I need to keep my streak. I have like a 240-something day streak and I don't want to ruin it. And we said yes. You know, I actually regret the fact that I said yes, because I think that it's important to, you know, what you're going to, if you're going to set a discipline, you should set the discipline. And now I'm letting them know that they're allowed to negotiate their discipline by doing that. But okay, point being, socializing is sending a meaningless message of me wearing a bonnet saying LOL grounded from my phone just so that I can keep the notification of streak going. Is that really, if I keep them from having that type of life, is it really stunting their socialization? Because to me, I think Snapchat is stunting socialization more than being able to have access to it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have to come to that conclusion on your own. I don't think you can force your kids to realize that, especially when being able to be a part of your social group requires you to have Snapchat or requires you to have Instagram. I think what's better is to, and this is just me, my philosophy on kids, I think, is to teach them how to use the resources for good instead of, you know, not good.
Right.
And so, and your situation is different, you know, because they're not your kids, obviously, and you know why they're different. I think with my kids, who knows? I don't have kids, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but I would rather, you know, figure out a way for them to integrate technology in a good way instead of a bad way, because technology has tremendous potential for good and evil, and it just depends on how you use it. And obviously you can't expect high school and middle schoolers to know how to socialize in a healthy way.
Think about the conversations that we actually had in high school. We actually had conversations. Like, you and I fumbled around stupid ideas and talked about Landmark, and we had our small group and we talked in person. If you like, they don't ever invite friends over. They don't ever go to their friend's house. And it's been 4 months. Like, and I know, you know, they moved here with us. So granted, they don't have a lifetime worth of friends here. But even still, it's like your version of talking to someone isn't talking to someone. And I don't know if, because of how young they are, how much they haven't established their own values, how much they haven't established socialization. If you give them 5 years, you know, from 13 to 18 of practicing socialization via emoji, is that really benefiting them? Because they're like, because I don't see, like, this is what I think would happen. If you have the flip phone, you'd be the bunt of the joke, obviously, for a bit. But if you've taught them to stand up straight with their shoulders back, then you can, if you've taught them to stand up and they have the ability to actually, you know, keep a decent amount of stamina in a conversation, the joke will end and it'll be fine. I don't imagine that there's ever going to be a friendship that's like, if you don't have Snapchat, I will not talk to you. And if that is the case, that's not the type of friend, they would quickly come to realize that that's not a friendship that they would want to keep anyways. So I don't see it as a loss by not having access to it. I see a lot of potential disadvantages to, you know, that would inhibit someone from ever practicing really having a conversation. Because if they didn't have that smartphone, they would either not have friends because they just come home and don't try, or they have to have friends because they have to talk to people. So I don't know. And then also it keeps them from, when break time comes, they're not like, you're, there's no opportunity to talk to anyone when you have that. And so that automatically opens up a window for which they could talk to someone or discover a new idea. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's something I'm really thinking about. I don't know what the right answer is, but it's really killing me just because of how much I see that they're addicted. And I just think that the likelihood of addiction is so high because, like, they, it's hard to, even as an adult, to limit yourself, and let alone a child, when everyone around you does it. So why would you listen to your parents when you're at that age, when, first of all, it's just weird to listen to your parents. And then also when no one else seems to believe the idea that your parents are telling you. It's just like, no, 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 your parents are just weird. They're just paranoid. They don't understand this generation. And, you know, Snapchat is totally normal and they're the weird ones. And so, like, I don't know. And maybe that is the case. Yeah. Maybe I am the weird one and I just don't understand the Snapchat thing. But I think there's a danger to virtual conversation versus actual.
And I will agree with that. I will agree with that 100%. But I also will point out that we are on Skype right now using technology and we're having meaningful conversation. Yeah. And so I don't think that it's taking away technology that's going to increase the level of communication. I think it's, like I've been saying, the integrating technology while still maintaining the level of communication that I think is the more important lesson to carry down to your kids than to just try to take away technology. Because I think that gives the impression that technology is bad. And when you're going to be growing up in the 2030s and 2040s, I think it's going to stunt you if you're thinking that technology is bad, because technology is going to continue to ramp up like it is right now. Right. And I think technology is just a tool and you can use it for good or you can use it for evil. And it's more important to learn how to choose good than to not have an option.
Have you ever watched – do you know who Simon Sinek is?
Yeah.
Have you watched his clip on his social media viewpoint? Like, have you seen that clip?
I don't know. I don't think so.
He talks about how it, like, when you get a notification, it releases dopamine. Just like when you drink alcohol to inhibit your problems, it's that same mechanism working in your brain. And so, you know, we put age restrictions on alcohol because we don't want their brain to become normalizing using alcohol to solve problems. And so I think that if that same mechanism is working in your brain, to me, that shows, hey, you aren't developed enough to make these decisions for yourself. So we're going to put inhibitors on you to make sure that you don't reach a point that's dangerous. Because I get what you're saying when it's just like, you know, maybe we can integrate good things, but let's just say they don't. You know, you give them the smartphone and they're up till 3 a.m. and they stop communicating with you, which already is going to happen because they're teenagers. But then also because they're losing the ability to communicate and express their pains and sorrows because they don't practice it. So, like, if they reached that point and you realize that it's become for the worse, like, how do you think that you should handle it? Do you take it away or do you put restrictions on? Like, is it just through conversations and hope that they get better later in life? Is it something I'm not saying?
I don't know.
Me either, man. That's why I have you here. It's been killing me. I've talked with Nia Chandler.
I don't know why you're asking me these questions. Yeah. I know.
Well,
I don't
we're both married and we're both eventually going to have kids, but I don't know.
It's true.
So, I don't know. It's been something that's really bothering me because it's really difficult to, I know that this is a challenge for each one of us in all of our generations. Like, you know, the next generation brings about its new problems and the old generation is always skeptical of it. Like, that's obviously the case. But it's very difficult to know how much of it is true and how much of it is your discomfort because of the change in the new generation. So that's kind of where we're wrestling with, but yeah, and that's totally the same thing as talking about porn, which, but no. So, I mean,
it's definitely related. It's definitely related in the sense where I think you have to figure out, how much restriction, do you need when it comes to pornography? And I think that's a good conversation to have. You know, I, every time I talk to somebody, usually if it's a conversation where somebody reaches out to me and they say, look, I'm struggling with pornography. And the thing that always blows them away is how hard line I am about making sure you cut off access. I think because pornography is such a hidden thing, right. That they think the path to getting rid of it in your life is just choosing not to do it.
Right.
But the reality is when pornography becomes a thing that you're doing almost every day, it's deeper than just a choice. It's actually an addiction, and pornography addiction is a scientific thing. It's a real thing.
Right.
And, it's in your brain. It's just like any other addiction. Yeah. And, you have to, put boundaries on it. You have to, you can't just choose not to do it, because I'm just going to, spoiler alert, you're not going to choose not to do it. Yeah. In the moment when you're tempted and it's there and your computer's open and you're typing in Google, like, bro, you're going to do it at that point.
I know.
I'm sorry, but the reality is I mean, that's what,
I'm on the same page too. Like, I've had to cut off literally almost everything. And before, when Covenant Eyes and Accountable to You, they were really restrictive. Like, I had to copy the link inside of my email and then paste it into Covenant Eyes. It was the worst, but, so like, that was terrible, because it's like, well, this isn't even a smartphone anymore. Like, this is just dumb. Now it's pretty much integrated. So that's fine. But no, I agree. It's hard, because you just wish that it's just like, I should just be able to stop. It's like, well, I don't need those blockers. Right. I don't need, it's just like, okay. Okay, fine. And you know, I did that for years, and eventually it's just like, fine.
I think we as humans overestimate the control we have on ourselves.
Yeah.
I think we like to think that we have complete control over our actions, but, I dare anybody to look back on their last day and check mark all the things you chose intentionally to do with your day. And it's like four or five things. The rest of the things were all, you were on automatic pilot. It's like,
or so, you chose deliberately not to do them.
You chose deliberately not to do something that you want to do. It's like, when's the last time you've done that in a month? You know, maybe once. Yeah. Like, it's not the way that we naturally live as humans. And I think because of that, we have to counteract it with you're putting walls outside of ourselves. And that's like Covenant Eyes. That's like accountability, you know, whatever it means. But I think the access thing is important. And it's funny. Every time I talk to people about it, they're blown away with how much they need to limit the access. I think at some point in their minds, whether they say it out loud or not, they're like, really? I have to do that? And I'm telling you, like, yes, you do, because you cut off access on your phone and you're just going to move to your computer. You cut off access to your computer, you're going to move to, your iPad.
Apple TV.
I mean, like, I'm going to be real. You're going to move to your wife's phone when she's not looking. Like,
bro,
there's things
that is
a hard temptation
to avoid. No, I get it. Like, it's
people
there. You'll always find another way to get it. And like, I've been on a witch hunt for 3 years. It's been like a witch hunt of like, oh, I have access, got to cut it off. And it's humiliating, because my wife was part of that conversation, you know? So it's like, hey, can you enter this password? So my wife has the restrictions passcode. Gosh, it's like, it's literally, what do you call it? What do you call snipping your balls? That's what it feels like.
Castration?
We're just like, he's like, here, can you enter this password? Because I found another way and I need you to block it. So, and then you do it on your phone. And so it's just like method after method after method. It's like, hey, I found another method on the laptop. So like, I thought we blocked all methods. It's like, oh, we did. But then like, in my sophisticated knowledge of technology, I realized that if I do this, then I can get away with it and you don't get the report. So I don't want to do that anymore. And that's why I'm being honest and telling you. So can you just enter the password? And to not get irritated or shameful is really hard, because it is shameful. You're like, I'm sorry, I did it again.
I relate it to the moment where it's late at night and you have to wake up early and you can't fall asleep and you're looking at your clock and it's 1:42. You have to wake up at 7 and you're like, okay, I have 5 hours and 18 minutes until, you know what I mean? It's like your brain just starts like just going and going and going crazy. And like, the more you're trying, the more you're wanting to fall asleep, the more you can't because your brain, it's the same thing when you're like struggling with temptation and you get a block on your phone. You're like, okay, well I could go into my computer and turn off my Wi-Fi and then like, you know what I mean?
You know, that little video clip of that guy and like the chalkboard and the math equations are popping up behind him. It's so dumb, man. Like,
and the reality is like, you can't fully block it. Because at the end of the day, you're going to find a way. But the purpose of blocking access is to give you another checkpoint on your way to messing up where you
like
have
if you've
got
to jump over this over. Hopefully by the fifth block, you're just like, oh yeah, I should you're stop. Like
oh yeah, that's why I can't because I shouldn't. And so it's.
I discovered so there was a way that I found out to shut off Covenant Eyes on my phone. Like I figured out like because I don't have access to deleting it, so that was what I was doing at first. You just delete the app. It's like on the computer it doesn't work that way, but so I had to eliminate access to deleting the app. But even with that, then it's just like, okay, well I figured out a way around that, and I think it was like 2 months ago it hit me where I've been trying as hard as I could to tell the truth. And bro, it was like, you know, cause one thing that Jordan Peterson emphasizes that I really have, it's kind of very convicting in that sense. It's like, don't tell a lie and don't act out a lie. And I like the acting out a lie. I've thought about that a lot. And one of the things that I realized when I was thinking about it was I agreed to be monitored on this phone. And by me shutting this off so that I don't get a report sent out, I'm acting out a lie because it's breaking the words in which I promised even years ago to make sure that I'm not going to do this anymore in my marriage. And so far, that has been enough for me to not shut it off since. Cause I'm just like, well, like, are you gonna live by this value or are you gonna find an excuse, even in one excuse of not doing it? And so like, luckily my value in being truthful is enough to kind of hold me at that. I still look for other ways. Like, you know, like I'm looking for any excuse to be innocent. Like, someone, I don't know, like I'm just waiting for someone to bring in an iPad that isn't in this family's, that doesn't have a porn blocker, that doesn't have a password, so that I can be like, oh no, oops, it wasn't blocked, I'm so sorry. I'm looking for those moments because then it's just like, at least I didn't break it, you know, I was innocent, it just showed itself up before me. But you know, those moments, first of all, never happen, and when they do, there's usually another inhibitor that kind of keeps me from doing it. But it's been really helpful because it's like, you know, it's the same thing. Like, you might not be speaking a lie, but you're acting one out. And when I realized that, I was like, fine. Like, I don't know. It was good enough for me so far to keep going. And that's been very helpful. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you having this conversation. Like, I know that it's, you know, you and I both share kind of the importance of it, but I do appreciate you. You know, you've been here for me, and I appreciate even that. So thank you very much.
Yeah. I think it's been good. And I recommend this to anybody who is trying to get rid of pornography from their life. It's like, surround yourself with people who are also trying to get rid of it, and also surround yourself with people who have found freedom and they haven't done pornography for a long time. Because it's really helpful to have that accountability with people. You know, Skylar, the other day, Skylar just checked in on me, how you doing with pornography? And nobody had done that in a while. And it was just like so encouraging to have him, and he sent me like a Bible verse and like a nice little encouragement. And it was just good to have that person there. And I think, you know, having people who are seeing your reports on your computer, in your phone, and they scare you because you don't want to have that conversation, but they also encourage you and they tell you you can do it. Because I think one of the things that I remember I really hold on to this day is I was having a conversation with a leader I had, somebody who I looked up to, and he just told me, he's like, I just want to remind you, like, you can beat this. Like, you can have victory and you can get to a place where you don't struggle with pornography anymore. And I don't know why, like, obviously maybe I knew that, but just hearing that was just, I don't forget that moment. And even times when I've really struggled with it and I really want to watch porn, I think back to that moment and I'm like, no, I can choose to say no. I can, have self-control. And it's just, and so if anybody's listening to this, like, you can beat it. Like, you can have victory and you can get to the place where it's been a year. You can have that 1 year celebration that I haven't had, I haven't watched porn in it. Like, that's huge. And that is something, whether society is going to praise you for it or not, like, it doesn't matter. Right. Like, you can know that you have beaten something that most people have never beaten. So yeah, you can and you will. So yeah, man. Glad I can have this conversation, dude.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I'll give you one more shout out. You can find David on Instagram at @DavidJRAtwell. Thanks again for being here, man. And
dude,
we'll catch up another time.